The Electronics Communications Privacy Act, otherwise known as ECPA, consists of two bills, Senate Bill S-1667 and House Bill H-R-3378. On Thursday, January 30, 1986, a hearing was held in Washington discussing the House version of the proposed privacy legislation. Bob Horvitz of ANLRT, the Association of North American Radio Clubs, was there at that hearing.
There were five witnesses that testified before the subcommittee. The first witness was AT&T, the second was Southwestern Bell, and they spoke together as one panel. The discussion was very close to what you would have expected from these two companies. They're the primary sponsors of this legislation, and they both supported it quite a bit. AT&T did not focus on what we regard as the major change which they are proposing in the legislation. In their written testimony, they submitted but did not quote in the oral part of the presentation. They proposed to expand the definition of the word intercept in the bill. This is something which I'm focusing on right now, because the term right now, intercept, refers to the acquisition of the contents of the message. It would be made unlawful to do. And they propose to expand that to acquiring not just the message, but any portion of the communication. And they haven't defined what they mean by that. I suspect they meant any time segment of the communication, but it's possible that they might interpret it to mean even the electromagnetic radiation carrying the signal. After the two telephone representatives testified, the second panel consisted of Perry Williams of the ARRL, a gentleman from the Tandy Corporation, Mr. Kunrick, and Terry Colgan, Executive Secretary of ANARC, and they were to represent the scanner, listener, hobbyist spectrum in the testimony. Perry Williams spoke first with a bit more support for ANARC's position than many people had expected. Terry Colgan spoke on ANARC's behalf and made as an effective presentation as I think any human being could. And Perry Williams, also from the ARRL, made a number of good points, and in particular referring to the apprehension of the cellular people that scanner operators could eavesdrop on their phone calls. Terry explained that the problem is really not due to the fact that there are all these scanner people out there with the desire to eavesdrop. The real problem is that cellular phone calls are easily audible on ordinary television sets without any special equipment at all. That fact was brought out in the hearings, and I think it was very important for the committee to hear that, because I think their concept has been is if they can stamp out this little criminal community, they can solve the problem. And in fact, the problem is due to the design of cellular, which is totally transparent to radio monitors. ANARC's position is that when a system goes out that way, unencrypted, it is the equivalent of sending a postcard as opposed to sending a letter, where you do in fact have an expectation of privacy protection from the Postal Service. We believe that the bill should protect encrypted and scrambled communications, and that such communications are displaying by their very form that they wish privacy, and they have taken precautions against casual intercept. In fact, Representative Kastenmeier, who chaired the hearings, mentioned in passing that one of the changes they were considering making in the next version of the bill was to say that inadvertent interceptions would be lawful. Another approach would be to require a minimum level of encryption before the communications was afforded statutory protection against intercept. But Chairman Kastenmeier made, I think, what is in many ways the basic underlying point to keep in mind in this legislation, that the technology has changed the conventions of communication to the point where the law has to change to keep up with it, and that in making these changes, there is bound to be conflict in the existing distribution of rights to the use of the radio spectrum. And it's not at all clear that simply a rational discussion, such as really did occur at these hearings, is going to be the sole factor in shaping this bill. If the committee perceives that some provisions are, in fact, outrageous and regarded as unpopular radio knowledgeable community, they're going to consider changes. If they don't hear complaints, they're not going to consider changes in respect to those interests. But at any rate, I think that the presentation that was made at the hearing was very effective. It established in the record that the traditional policy of the FCC has been that if you're sending out a signal and you don't want it intercepted, you bear the initial responsibility for protecting that signal. And if you don't display in any way that you've taken steps to protect the signal, then you cannot blame others for acquiring the contents. AT&T mentioned in their testimony that they had a policy to afford the customers the same confidence that they would have in face-to-face conversation. And we agree with that they should, but they should recognize that in cellular telephony, if you're speaking loud enough to be heard by others, then you can't presume to regard your conversation as wholly private in the first place.
Why don't you go into the introduction of the scrambling chip that the Fair Information Service had informed about earlier.
Oh, yeah, I'll tell that story. This is an example of how the coverage has contributed to our ability to present good evidence to the committee. I heard the report you did about the COM9046 scrambling chip, which is a simple voice inversion chip made by Standard Micro Electronics. First of all, we had made a recording off of a television tuned to channel 81 here in Washington, D.C., just taking very short snatches of cellular telephone conversations, just to show that these were totally vulnerable to ordinary television sets picking them up. And we tried for a few days to discuss this with the committee in detail. Basically, we wanted them to assure us that they would not regard this fairly careful selection, done so as to disguise the content and the identity of the callers, that they would not regard that as an intercept, because we intended to use it for the purposes of evidence before the committee. They would not do this, so we just simply bypassed that, announced that it was, you know, available if they should wish to examine it, and then played a very short segment of voice inversion as is provided by the COM9046 chip. And thanks to your help, then, we did track down this chip, and we got a physical specimen of it, and we generated a very short voice tape using the AT&T ship-to-shore operator as the voice source. And this was followed by another short sample of DVP, digital voice protection. It's the voice is digitized and then scrambled, and it sounds basically just like a long hiss. Anyway, the demonstration was really quite effective because it showed that there are possible measures and that they start at as low as $5. However, the gentleman from Tandy brought up the point that he was not aware of any encrypted cellular telephones currently on the market. I don't know if that is the case. We're studying that right now. But that if it were simply a matter of a $5 add-on, he wouldn't be testifying on behalf of this bill. So I think we're going to have to discuss or look at least with more sophistication at the problem of encryption for cellular. We've come up with a couple of ideas. One I think we are going to present to the committee. I think I'll just mention to you, you might see if you get any feedback from your listeners. The expectation of privacy in cellular phone calls has been rather carefully cultivated, but they've tried to make the channel as indistinguishable from a telephone channel as they can. We suggest that cellular phone calls be required to have a very unannoying beep tone every 10 seconds, just to alert the caller to the fact that it is a wireless line, and therefore it may not be secure. See, the problem is that the expectation of privacy comes from the impossibility of knowing whether you're talking by wire or wireless. We propose that that could be used as a signal to differentiate the two. Another idea might be to have handoffs within a cell so that the calls are automatically switched to a different channel after 10 seconds or so. This would mean that any interceptor would hear at most 10 seconds of the call. So there are a number of steps that the cellular phone companies could take. AT&T said during the hearings that they did not intend to offer encryption service, and that if encryption was to be used on their cellular lines, that they would have to be provided by the customers. I was fairly surprised by that, especially because SBS has just announced that they are offering an encrypted service for their satellite links, which is the wireless part of their network. The cost there is 1.2 cents per minute as an extra charge. So I was rather surprised by the AT&T position, and I be very surprised if they could really hold to it in the open market.
This has been part one of a two-part interview with Bob Horvitz of ANARC, the Association of North American Radio Clubs, with his analysis of the January 30th, 1986 hearing in Washington concerning the House version of the proposed Electronics Communications Privacy Act. Next time, Bob will clarify once and for all the importance of the proposed privacy legislation to the radio amateur. For the Bear Information Service, I'm Hap Holly, KC9RP in Chicago.
So far, so good?
Pretty amazing.
Sound all right?
Yeah. Let's talk later.
Here's part two.
Okay.
Cell Wars, a special report concerning the January 30th, 1986 hearing, part two. Continuing interview with Bob Horvitz. Playing time, 9 minutes and 40 seconds. Beginning 3, 2, 1.
The fact is, the committee writing this bill is not a technical committee. They do not have the kind of experience that the Subcommittee on Telecommunications has. Their background is in civil rights, and they're in need of some technical input. And the ham radio community and the shortwave listening community has to provide them with that information.
Welcome to part two of a two-part interview with Bob Horvitz of ANARC, the Association of North American Radio Clubs, with his analysis of the hearing held in Washington January 30th, 1986, concerning the House version of the proposed ECPA, the Electronics Communications Privacy Act.
Perry Williams spoke on behalf of the ARRL. He's been in Washington representing them for many, many years, has long experience in the Congress, and he spoke very eloquently about the need that hams have for monitoring the radio spectrum and the fact that this goes back to the very beginning of radio regulation. The Act of 1912 spelled out the right that amateurs had to listen, and he also pointed out that the term amateur in 1912 was generic. There were no licensed amateurs. It included listeners. He also, I think, gave the committee quite a bit to think about in terms of pointing out the accessibility of cellular on the ordinary television sets. And more importantly, suggesting the importance of education of the population about the vulnerability of these systems. He said it would be appropriate for the cellular companies to explain to their customers what the vulnerabilities are, and we certainly agree with that and think that part of the reason there is an expectation of privacy is simply based on the fact that the cellular companies have not been exactly forthcoming about the privacy problem. So we were very pleased that Perry supported us in that, and in fact articulated the position more clearly than we had. So I think all in all, the way the hearing unfolded was that it started off with fairly business as usual kinds of discussions of the bill. The second panel really opened a whole new perspective on the legislation, and it's not clear what effect this will have on the thinking of the subcommittee. There's another round of hearings scheduled for sometime in latter part of February. We believe that the only witnesses there will be the Justice Department, because part of the bill has to do with restrictions on the government use of interception and wiretap and the responsibility of the carriers vis-a-vis the federal government. But at any rate, I think these hearings were very successful, certainly from our point of view, and we're just hoping now to follow up with clarifications and comments on some of the things that were said in the hearings and further documentation of the situation that we think will be helpful.
Isn't it fair to assume that some portion of the Electronic Communication Privacy Act will be passed?
Very definitely. There's no doubt about that. There's no doubt about the need for it. There may be some doubt about the approach they're taking. We see there being a problem with the very breadth of the term electronic communications. It doesn't differentiate between wire and wireless at all, and it doesn't differentiate between purely wire, mixed wire, wireless, and purely wireless, and we think those are rather important distinctions. And it also ignores the fact that not all information is of equal value or vulnerability. So Yes, clearly there will be a bill. We're not at all sure how much the final bill will resemble this, but Representative Kastenmeier was very clear in saying that this bill is going to be handled carefully. They're not going to rush it into law. They understand that the issues are complex, and they want to hear people's opinions about what the law should be. There is a need for the law, and we certainly support the intent of the law, which is to protect the privacy of private communications. Anyone would be a fool to oppose that. But the fact is, the committee writing this bill is not a technical committee. They do not have the kind of experience that the subcommittee on telecommunications has. Their background is in civil rights, and they're in need of some technical input. And the ham radio community and the shortwave listening community has to provide them with that information, not just about the existing traditions. And once they see that there's more than just perverts and criminals that are interested in spectrum rights, then I think that they can approach this task of writing a bill with a lot more insight into the realities of the situation. But this is not going to be a quick process. Congress has got a lot to discuss this year. We're not sure what the Senate side is doing. Our understanding is that they're focusing more on the electronic mail aspects of the bill. But now is the time to make yourself heard. They're just about to begin redrafting this bill. They've been gathering some evidence in public as at this meeting, and the mail is starting to come in. They're going to start thinking about ways they could attack this problem that impinges least on the people who are articulating their perspective on this.
What would you suggest to a radio amateur or a shortwave listener should write? And who to?
The person to write to is Representative Kastenmeier, subcommittee chairman. The subcommittee's full name is the Subcommittee on Courts, Civil Liberties, and the Administration of Justice, room 2137, Russell House Office Building, Washington, D.C. I believe it's 20515. As to what to say to them, I don't know. There are so many issues that the ham community could really provide useful information to the committee. I think one thing that needs to be driven home to them is the very deep difference that exists between wire and wireless channels, in that a wire can be wholly owned property, so that something like an absolute right to exclude others is realistic, but that the radio spectrum is a public resource and it is not privately owned by the license holders. So to some extent, and I don't want to sound too cynical about this, it has crossed my mind in reviewing the testimony that we heard that one could look at this as a use of the privacy issue to establish something like private property rights in that part of the spectrum which is occupied by telephone interconnected wireless systems. And AT&T's proposal that the term intercept be expanded to include any portion of the communication without defining what that meant, I think is something that ham should comment on, because we believe that it really is important and possible to distinguish between the privacy protection of the information carried by an electromagnetic wave and the radiation carrying it itself. In other words, there should be no protection for the radiation and as much protection for the information as the law and the provider of communications wish to provide.
Anything else you want to add?
I basically just wanted to say that I think that the amount of attention that this bill has gotten in the ham press and the amount that it will get in the months ahead are very important, because it's very important that the ideas be shared and that some sort of consensus be worked out about what is fair in terms of spectrum rights, because there does obviously have to be a balance between the right of privacy, the expectation of privacy, and the tradition and the reality of radio. It's not at all clear how this line can be drawn. The committee understands the problem, and they're really hoping that they will get intelligent feedback. It's been great watching them evolve past the point of thinking that anyone who opposed this bill had to be a criminal or a pervert, which is initially, I think, how they regarded us. And over time, I think they've realized that they had tread very heavily into an area that they weren't familiar with, and now that they understand that, they're really willing to learn, so that it's important for people to inform them about the situation, the traditions, the physical realities of radio, and their attitude toward how the line between privacy protection and public access has to be drawn.
You've been listening to a two-part interview with Bob Horvitz of NARC, the Association of North American Radio Clubs, which represents some 10,000 shortwave and scanner listeners nationwide. Your comments concerning the ECPA, the Electronic Communications Privacy Act, should be addressed to Representative Kastenmeyer, Subcommittee on Courts, Civil Liberties, and the Administration of Justice, Room 2137, Russell House Office Building, Washington, D.C., 20515. Again, that's if you wish to send your comments concerning the ECPA, write Representative Kastenmeyer, Subcommittee on Courts, Civil Liberties, and the Administration of Justice, Room 2137, Russell House Office Building, Washington, D.C., 20515. For the Bear Information Service, I'm Hap Holly, KCNRP in Chicago.